We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right. You guys got a lot to cover. Let's start, as usual, with local. And we just had a primary.
Oh, yeah, you're right, we did. there really wasn't very much of interest on the ballot this time around, but the one race that was particularly meaningful was extremely disappointing. That was the state Supreme Court race in which former Tim Iman lawyer and corporate hack Jim Johnson was reelected to the state Supreme Court with 63% of the vote, which tells us a couple things. Number one, it tells us that the corporate money plays a disproportionate role in low voter information races like a judicial race, a Supreme Court race. But the other thing that it tells us is that there was a disproportionate number of conservative voters participating in the primary this year, which you can interpret one of two ways. You can either say, well, that's a part of the Republican base being fired up, but the Tea Party candidate, Clint Didier, and I do pronounce it the French way just because he's an inner Frenchman, didn't do very well. He barely broke double digits. But it also tells us that there's a real ceiling to what Dino Rossi can get in the general when he goes up against Patty Murray for her Senate seat. Rossi and DGA's vote combined was only about I think 3 or 4 points less than what Murray got this past week. And if you take Jim Johnson's vote and the 63% that he got for the state Supreme Court seat, it tells you that the percentage of people who vote were conservative were probably as high or higher than they're going to be in the general election in November when many more people vote. So Rossi's got a lot of work to do, particularly because Murray has a lot more money on hand than he does. Unfortunately, with President Obama's visit this week, Murray unveiled her strategy that I think is going to backfire really badly on her. She is touting herself once again as the mom in tennis shoes, which I think is supposed to be some sort of a claim that she's an outsider as opposed to Dino Rossi's corporate insider. And it is true that Rossi has gotten a lot of business money, but so has Murray. Murray has gotten a lot of the Washington State business money from companies like Boeing and Microsoft and a lot of the local business groups, whereas Rossi's gotten a lot of the, you know, U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Wall Street kind of money. But they're both essentially corporate tools. The difference is that Rossi is never going to cut a break to the middle and working classes, whereas Murray occasionally does. But the whole idea that after 18 years in the Senate, Murray is some sort of an outsider when she has devoted her entire Senate career to climbing her way up the party hierarchy, to getting on the Appropriations Committee so as to be a mover and shaker in the, you know, Warren Magnuson Scoop Jackson mold,
And
be very successful at it and build her whole persona as a senator around getting money for Washington State. She wants to be a mover and a shaker and an insider. That's been her whole identity. And to claim at some point, at this point, what she claimed when she was first elected 18 years ago, that she's just a humble mom in tennis shoes, is really kind of an insult to the intelligence of the average voter and viewer also. And I think it's really likely to backfire on her, because you hear that or you look at that and you just want to roll your eyes and say, come on, that's just dishonest.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't give her credit for the things that she's done that have been good. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of things she hasn't done, but what she has done is play that insider game very well.
Yeah. And she should stand up and take credit for what she's done and basically say, look, this is what I've brought to the state of Washington. We wouldn't have the transportation dollars that we have if I hadn't been on the Appropriations Committee, et cetera, et cetera. She should just be honest and say that, what we get instead is her, you know, pretending that she's an outsider. And that's just, I don't know if that's going to score her points or if that's going to cost her voters in November.
All right. Moving on, Mayor Mike McGinn putting together a panel on homelessness.
Yeah, this week Mayor McGinn announced that he was forming a citizens review panel on homelessness. Now, you might be want to scoff when you hear that, but there are some fairly good
You're
people.
Right, I do.
There are some fairly good people who are going to be on the panel, including Tim Harris, the executive the executive director of Real Change Homeless newspaper, and some other good folks too. But what I think is interesting is that this marks the beginning of a change from the Nichols administration. Their policy for the homeless was to sweep them out of the city, literally, by instituting these sweeps of homeless camps and trying essentially to move on homeless people and make them someone else's problem.
And seize their property and criminalize their behavior.
Yeah, seize their property and hold it in a warehouse where they can't get to it. And yeah, exactly. At the same time, what's going on in the city, too, is affordable housing is disappearing really fast. And under the Nichols administration, he was big on gifts to developers. Ignoring the fact that we're losing a lot of affordable housing. And, of course, with the housing market in the state it is now, that's pushing more people out onto the streets, people who are losing their homes. And that means that more than ever, the homeless population in the city of Seattle is going to need more services, not less. So one of the things that the panel will be considering is what services are most important for the homeless, whether or not this city can somehow come up with a way to build or encourage more affordable housing, and to look at the issue of whether or not a homeless encampment can be set up on city land, and if so, how that would function and where. I also want to point out, too, that during the recession, the National Coalition for the Homeless came out with their count of the number of homeless people who have been murdered in the past year. 43 homeless people murdered in 2009. That's about triple the number that it was 4 years ago before the start of the recession.
And that's across the U.S.
Yeah, that's across the nation. And they also cited one of the major contributors to violence against homeless people is cities that try to sweep homeless encampments out of their city limits. That just creates a climate of hate, and it basically gives tacit permission to young men and teenagers to go after the homeless with a baseball bat. And that's something that we need to do something about here in Seattle. And that's what I hope the new Citizen Review panel will look at that issue as well.
All right. Moving on, full body scanners coming to airports near you.
Oh, yeah. We got the announcement this week that SeaTac, starting in late September, will have full body scanners for people who want to get on an airplane. As if metal detectors are not enough, now you will have to get irradiated as well before you get on your plane. Of course, proponents say that, it's only a small dose. It's about the same amount of radiation you would get if you were flying at 30,000 feet for 2 minutes. However, they don't tell you that the majority of the radiation is concentrated to your skin so that...
And your scalp, so that
security folks can look at you naked without your clothing and see if you're hiding something. That poses a particular risk to people who have sensitive skin, to people who have been diagnosed previously with skin cancer, and, of course, to children and adolescents who were not tested in the safety study for these full-body scanners. It also poses a particular risk to airline workers and people who are frequent flyers who will get dose after dose after dose, perhaps several a day, with these full body scans. Also, folks may have followed the scandal over radiation from medical devices and how many hospitals had not been bringing in maintenance workers to recalibrate those medical devices and were giving patients far more than the allowed dose of radiation, in some cases, giving them terrible radiation burns. There was no plan set into place that we know of for regular recalibration of these full-body scanners at SeaTac, and that is an additional risk, not to mention, of course, the risk to your privacy.
Yeah, and I can just imagine TSA employees sitting in another room, you know, snickering and making jokes about people's silhouetted naked bodies.
Yeah.
It's just really kind of a disgusting prospect.
Yeah. Of course, you will be given an option. You will be able to opt out of getting the full body scan if you want to have a full body pat down.
Yeah, if you don't want to miss your flight.
Yeah, and you'd better come half a day early at least to wait in line to get the full body pat down.
All right.
Just kind of adding to the humiliation we have to go through to fly these days.
Moving on, the Seattle School Board and Facebook.
Yeah, the Seattle School Board passed a really pretty nauseating policy this week, authorizing principals to discipline students for material that they publish publicly on social networking, like Facebook and Twitter and so forth, whether or not that material was published on a school computer or at school, or whether it was done in the privacy of their own home. Now, in terms of court decisions, courts have ruled for some time that students have no First Amendment, minors have no First Amendment rights, and that schools can do these kind of off-site disciplinaries, but just because they can do it doesn't mean they should do it. You know, the whole message this sends, that that students have no First Amendment rights, that students do not have any right to free expression, and that, you know, anytime somebody writes a short story with a violent element, they then become either a disturbed child or a security risk. You know, there's just this sort of hysteria around behavior of students that is just entirely inappropriate and very discouraging to see the school board going down this path.
And what does this teach kids? I mean, these kids are going to grow up to be the security personnel of the future. You're essentially teaching them, well, you don't have any rights now, you know, so it's okay to deny people rights when you're an adult and you're working in the security profession.
Or conversely, it's okay to expect that you don't have any rights once you're an adult.
Once you're an adult and an adult citizen, regardless of what you do.
In other words, it'll being the perfect student without any rights will prepare you in the future to become the perfect worker without any rights.
Yes.
All right. And up next, the Goldmark McKenna update.
Yeah, the story continues of the refusal of State Attorney General Rob McKenna to provide a defense for Department of Natural Resources head Peter Goldmark in his a lawsuit that's being prosecuted against him by the Okanagan County PUD. Goldmark, a Democrat, and McKenna, a Republican, and McKenna's refusing to provide counsel to Goldmark, even though by statute he's required to as State Attorney General. Now it turns out that through a Freedom of Information request by a local attorney, that, as reported on Horse's Ass, which has been doing a lot of good reporting on this particular story, that that McKenna's own office is not only aware that a lot of the arguments legally that have been put forward by McKenna on KOW and other media outlets are bogus, but that they themselves argued exactly the opposite in this court case when it was first being heard at the trial level. It tells you once again that this is an extremely political move by McKenna in order to try and basically decide, pick and choose how he'll use the Attorney General's office in order to either support or not support publicly elected officials that he disagrees with.
All right. Moving on to National and News Corp making some donations.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch's company, News Corp, which owns Fox News and the Wall Street Journal, this week in June, they made a donation of $1 million to the Republican Governors Association. Of course, it wasn't made public until this week when the Republican Governors Association filed their second quarter report of what contributions they had received.
So you got something against charitable giving?
This is one of the largest ever contributions by a media corporation to a partisan political organization, and it is astounding in that they're clearly trying to influence the election of governors here in the United States. There are 37 governor seats up for grabs in November, and this comes just prior to 2011 when there's going to be a national redrawing of congressional district lines
based on the 2010 census.
Right, based on the census, but it's essentially state governments that sit down and do this. And so they're currently, Democrats hold about 26 governor seats, and clearly the Republicans are trying to get a majority and try to redraw some of the congressional district lines in their favor. This is a once in every 10 year event. So, I find it really disturbing that a media corporation says, well, we can donate $1 million to the Republican Governors Association. That doesn't mean that we are right right-leaning in our reportage when, in fact, it's pretty obvious that they are.
Well, what I don't understand is why Fox is donating money to the Republicans when it should be the other way around. The Republicans have gotten an awful lot of value out of Fox News over the last couple decades.
Well, I think Fox News has gotten an awful lot of value out of the Republicans as well, considering that they provide most of their content.
That's true.
All right. Moving on to this week's economic news.
Yeah. This week, there was a study that came out by the National Bureau of Economic Research that said the recession has had a major impact on the use of routine medical care, like annual checkups and routine exams here in the U.S. Americans have reduced their routine medical care more than people in Britain, Canada, France, or Germany, the five nations that were under the study. The population, I just want to point out, the population of all five of these countries experienced loss of income, surging unemployment, lost wealth because of falls in their stock markets and because of lower housing prices or lower housing costs because of the collapse of the housing market. And in some places, like in Britain, the collapse of the housing market has been more severe than it has in many places here in the United States. But the decrease in the use of routine medical care really varied from nation to nation. In Canada, it was a minus 5.3%. In Britain, it was a 7.6% decrease. In Germany, a 10% decrease. In France, about a 12% decrease. Here in the U.S., the decrease in the use of routine medical care was 26.5%.
It's a lot more expensive here.
Well, yes. In fact, the cutbacks correlated with the amount of out-of-pocket costs people have to pay in each country. So it's very clear that people in the U.S., because their out-of-pocket costs are higher, are foregoing things like vaccinations, taking their kids to get their teeth cleaned, getting blood pressure and cholesterol screening, mammograms, you name it, all the things that tend to make medical care cheaper because you're catching things earlier and you're avoiding the catastrophic illnesses that are so expensive and that have made our healthcare costs surge way above that of any other developed nation. Also this week in economic news, on Tuesday, the Obama administration had their big meeting to try to resolve issues surrounding the housing market and the mortgage mess. What was interesting is that everyone wanted them to address the issue of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the fact that the public treasury is funding and supporting the housing market. But Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner cut off all discussion about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac by saying once again that it is the Obama administration's policy to prop up the housing market and to ensure that anyone can get a loan to buy a house even in a downturn. And I'm sorry, but that's wrong. That's what was completely wrong with the mortgages that were made in 2006, 2007, and 2008, is that anyone who wanted it could get a mortgage, could get a loan to buy anything they wanted, and that has to stop.
All right. Anything else on the economic news front?
Nope, let's move on.
Moving on to conflicting reports as to the amount of oil in the Gulf.
Yeah, the BP has been making the media rounds recently and getting a lot of uncritical reporting to their claims that something around three-quarters of the oil that leaked into the Gulf of Mexico from the Deepwater Horizon disaster has been cleaned up over the past several months. Now this week, a University of Georgia report from scientists there claiming that up to 79%, that's not a quarter, that's like 4/5 of the oil still remains in the Gulf of Mexico, which is a huge discrepancy. It's a discrepancy between 1/4 and 4/5.
Yeah.
Who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe the scientists or are you going to believe BP? Well, we'll leave it to the judgment of our discerning listeners.
The federal government really made a trade-off there. They made a trade-off between having the oil all float to the surface, be visible, and having it wash ashore and pollute the shoreline versus pouring millions of gallons of chemicals on it to disperse it and have it linger for months and maybe even years in the water column beneath the surface of the water. That's what they're finding now. They're finding a huge plume that is not just miles in width and length, but tens, if not hundreds of miles in width and length and depth. In terms of its effect on the marine population, it's going to be pretty catastrophic, I think, because, you know, the largest migration, natural migration in the world is the migration of animals that live on the bottom of the ocean up through the water column to the surface every night. That after the sun goes down, those creatures are going to be exposed to this massive column of oil in the Gulf.
And we still don't have a full understanding of just how much water is submerged at the lower levels. But every time we learn something, we learn that there's more than we thought.
Yeah, and we don't know enough about the marine ecosystem to really understand what the impact is going to be. But that's the trade-off that the federal government made, and we'll just see in the future what the impact will be.
All right. Moving on to international and a study out about the efficacy of new drugs.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't read about this in the U.S. press. I read about this in the British press. The study was presented at the American Sociological Association's annual meeting in Atlanta, Georgia, and it was a study done by the University of Medicine and Dentistry in New Jersey. They looked at the studies done for the efficacy of new drugs and how these studies were presented to the FDA. And what they found was that up to 85% of new drugs offer few, if any, new benefits to the people who would be taking them over drugs that are already on the market, and that many of them, up to almost 50%, I think the study quoted 49%, raise really serious concerns about adverse side effects and some very serious toxicity issues. I found this kind of interesting, given that, as Jav reported last week, most of the studies that are done on new drugs are done offshore in order to save money and because it's easier in other countries to massage the details of the study. But what this study found was that they said, and I want to read a direct quote from The Independent, said, quote, "One study of 111 final applications for approval to the FDA of these drugs found that 42% were missing data from adequately randomized trials, 40% were supported by flawed testing of dosages, 39% lacked evidence of clinical efficacy, that means nearly 40% didn't show that they did anything for you, and 49% raised concerns about serious adverse side effects." So I find that pretty shocking and appalling. But, of course, this is how the pharmaceutical companies make money. As soon as one of their drugs the patent expires and generics can be made, then they have to come up with something new. And often the something new that they can patent and sell to you is going to be far worse for you than the generic that was already on the market.
What I also find interesting about this is, it was an American study presented in the U.S. about American-based pharmaceutical companies, but this wasn't on the evening news.
No, it wasn't reported here.
For some reason, this is a British paper, but for some reason this wasn't reported on evening news programs, 85% of whose advertising is these same drugs.
Yeah.
Not that there's any link there or anything, but it does make you wonder what else about Big Pharma also isn't being reported in American media.
Right.
All right. Moving on to Iraq.
Yeah, The Onion really nailed this week with a long story on Obama declaring sort of victory in Iraq. And it really does kind of boil down to that, where, and I'll keep this brief because it's kind of obvious, but there is no such thing as victory in Iraq when you had over a million people dying because of the effects of the U.S. invasion, when the U.S. invasion to begin with was an illegal invasion, that was sold to the public based on outright lies. This is not anything that any victory is possible out of. And even to the day as the fighting continues, the quality of life for people in Iraq is far worse than it was even under Saddam Hussein, which is actually saying quite a bit. So it really should be marked as a tragedy more than anything else. The other thing to be aware of course, is that you've still got 50,000 soldiers, 100,000 mercenaries in these enormous bases in Iraq, and you're still going to have, Iraqis shooting at the U.S. until all of our soldiers leave. And that day, should be sooner rather than later.
All right. And Thailand?
After considerable U.S. pressure and over Russian protests, a Thai court ruled this week to extradite Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout to the U.S., a man who is known as the Merchant of Death. He is one of the most wanted arms dealers in the world on the U.N.'s 10 most wanted list. And this is one of those subtle ways in which the Obama administration has been a marked improvement over the Bush administration. This man never would have been prosecuted by the U.S. authorities under Bush. In fact, it's quite likely, given that the United States dominates the international arms market, that Viktor Bout worked with and for the Bush administration.
Oh, he did.
For some of its arms deals.
He did. He actually helped to transport weapons to Iraq during our invasion of Iraq.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And so this would actually make him one of the first people who worked for the Bush administration to face charges for his criminal activity during that time. He wasn't an elected official, granted, but it is some measure of accountability.
It'll be interesting, too, if we do get him extradited here and he goes on trial, to see if the testimony is going to be public and who else he fingers in terms of these guys hired me to do this and that. That would be kind of interesting to see.
And whether that testimony will be made public, of course.
Yeah, and whether any new charges come out of it.
All right. And finally, Sweden.
Yeah, Swedish authorities announcing yesterday that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is wanted on two counts of rape and molestation, which, given that they didn't release any details about these supposed charges, you have to withhold judgment on, of course, because it's possible it could have happened. It wouldn't be the first time that somebody on the side of truth and justice is personally a jerk. I would use a stronger word, but this is broadcast radio. Mm-hmm. But you have to say that this is extremely convenient in terms of the charges. The Pentagon and the U.S. government in particular is after Assange in a big way since the WikiLeaks release of the Baghdad video of a massacre of journalists and Iraqis, and after their release earlier this month of the various Afghan war documents, and the Pentagon has said that they want to bring this guy down. You have to look at three things with these supposed charges against Assange. Number one, that he has no such — he was in Sweden briefly last week, but he was only there briefly. He has no such history, and he knows his actions at this point are extremely heavily scrutinized by the media and by government agencies. Number two, governments do have histories of these sorts of smears against people that they don't like.
Yeah, remember Scott Ritter and the charges against him.
Scott Ritter, you can go back to allegations against Martin Luther King, a few of which in terms of the womanizing were actually true, but that was, nothing compared to
but
what
that
he
was not
accused
illegal,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and number three, that nobody is denying the veracity of WikiLeaks leaks and what they have revealed in terms of the behavior of the United States and other governments and their criminal activities. Those are crimes which are we actually know have occurred, which are far more serious, far more widespread in scope, and far more grave. And those are the ones that should be getting attention. And the fact that we're talking about this rather than those crimes is the whole point of this being a smear in the first place, is to take the heat off of what the U.S. government and other Western governments have done that WikiLeaks has revealed.
All right. And finally, events.
Yeah, this today from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., there's the Sustainable Living Festival at the Hunter Tree Farm property at 7744 35th Avenue Northeast. That's on Northeast 35th and Northeast 80th in Wedgewood. It features free workshops, speakers, food, music, demonstrations, solar cooker demonstrations, bicycle-powered appliances, etc. Go and have some fun.
All right. Talking as we do every week with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
You can find it on your friendly neighborhood computer at www.eatthestate.org. Updated regularly.
Very good. And if they want to send you a message.
Oh, that would be info or editorial. Let's call it editorial. Editorial at eatthestate.org for questions, comments, feedback, tips, any of that kind of good stuff.